Welcome to Set Free Speech, where Bible-believing individuals can come together to discuss challenging subjects. I am your host, Anthony Nahoza, and I'm excited to welcome my think partner for this episode. He is the founder of PRP. It's an organization, nonprofit. He is a really good friend. He's actually super helpful inside of the recovery community as well. Alika Gambill.
What's up, bro? Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. We finally get to do this.
Yeah, I know. We've been talking about it for a while, right? We just can never catch each other.
I know. So I'm glad to be here.
We're just busy people, right?
Yeah.
You're a busy man because you're not only caught up in your nonprofit, but you're also a father of two.
Yes.
And two very young boys, right? Tell me a little bit about your boys.
Well, I mean, I love them, you know, and but they can be a handful, you know. They've been sick recently,
yeah,
you know. And my wife, she bears more so of the burden when it comes to the kids, honestly, because you know, I'm the provider for the house, so I'm always at work and stuff, and got meetings, and you know, I'm spread pretty thin. You know, addiction took up a lot of my time. You know, now that when I got sober, I was told to, you know, fill up your time with productive things. So honestly, that's exactly what I did.
You know? I love it. I love it. Your two boys are awesome. I love both those kids. And they're young. You got your first boy. He is how old?
Angel, he's two. He's
two years old. Three. And then Little Chief is...
Yeah, Little Chief, he's 7 months.
Yeah, you got a couple of youngsters. You got a lot on your hand right now.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. Two kids and wife. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Right. Oh, you got a lot going on.
Yeah.
Alika, you've been hanging around with us in the Set Free movement in our chapter for like what? It feels like maybe a year or maybe coming up on a year or maybe over a year.
No, it's been almost 3 years, bro.
Really?
Yeah. It's been like 2.5 years.
No way. Yeah. Oh, man. Time is flying there. Yeah, yeah. I'm not keeping track very well at all. Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Uh-huh. But in the time frame, you have been like glued to it. You've been hanging around with Chief. You've been coming to all the meetings. You've been throwing your own meetings. You've been throwing up events and stuff. And a lot of people have been showing up because of the work that you're doing. And I think it's really, really cool. You're attaching people to Set Free movement with Chief and the Magic House. And I think it's super, super cool. So I know you, a lot of people inside of our circle knows who you are, but it's bound to be people that don't know who you are. So very shortly, it's not, I don't think it's as important to let people know who I think that you are. I think it's more interesting to find out who you think that you are. So give about 2 minutes and tell the world who it is that you think that you are.
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, as you know, I was in an addiction. My addiction lasted 20 years. One thing I know about addiction that it does, it strips us of our identity. So I had no idea who the hell I was. You know, right. What was going on?
Yeah.
And I try to look for my identity of who I am in the pants of every woman I was with, in money, prestige, titles, power, bank account, all these different things. And I never found it there.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
Amazing, right? I never found it in any of those places. But where I did find who I am was when I started to seek after God with my whole heart.
Right.
You know, and like when I met Chief, and all you guys at the Magic House, which props to Fausto, because without Fausto, I wouldn't have met none of you guys.
Yeah,
you
know? Those good people. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so one thing people like who know me now and people that are maybe newer to the Magic House have been around for maybe a year or so, something like that. Nobody really seen what I did in the beginning because I was just so intrigued and I was so like wowed by Chief Pastor Phil, you know, Dr. Phil, from all the things that he's done in his life, the ups, the downs, the Set Free ministries worldwide, all these things, and you know, Set Free Soldiers, all these different things, and the books and the documentaries and the DVDs and all these things, and you know, his fall and his comeback and all kinds of stuff. It was very inspiring.
Yeah.
So what I did, like every Sunday night, there's a meeting there, at the Magic House. And so when I first started coming around, this is what people don't know. And I don't go around broadcasting this, really. I don't. But if people want to talk about it, I do. So once in a great while, I'll bring it up to someone or something. But Chief, he's a very sought-after person. Like, you already know.
Yeah, of course.
Like, after the meeting is over, everybody just, like, you know, beelines it right to him. They want to talk, shake his hand, take a picture, all these things. So I recognized that when I first met him. So what I did when I first started coming around was I would wait to everybody have their turn, take the picture, have a shake his hand. man, to have a little conversation. And I waited till everybody left.
Yeah.
And me and Chief sat down for like 2 hours and we just chopped it up. I just, you know, we started to build the relationship. And I did that for months. And keep in mind, at that time, I was living all the way in Rancho Cucamonga.
That's right.
So, you know, I would get home like after midnight every time, every Sunday night. It was always late. And then, you know, got to get up early, get the kids, all this kind of stuff, you know. But going back to the question of who I am today, I know who I am because of whose I am. That's kind of cliche-ish in the Christian world, sure. I guess you could say. Sure. You know what I mean? But it's also the thing I know about cliches, because I'm in recovery. There's a ton of them. Is that they're true? They're true. Yeah. You know, I no longer look for my identity in things anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like I learned something from Dr. Miles Monroe. He said that, you know, when you know who you are, then you give value to things he says the chair you're sitting in should be rejoicing right now. You know what I mean?
I see.
Stuff like that. That's good. Know, like the Bentley or the Harley or whatever it is doesn't give you value. By you getting in it, it gives it value type of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not this like arrogant or kind of thing, but it's like a godfidence that we got knowing that, you know, who we are. Because I really did not know who I was, to be honest, especially active in my addiction. I said yes to Jesus when I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I was seeking, I was learning a little bit. And what attracted me to Jesus initially, to be honest, it wasn't Jesus.
No.
I was invited, bro, as a teenager to go to these youth groups.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, let me check it out.
Yeah.
So I show up and there's all these chicks there, bro. I was like, I'll be back next week. And sure enough, then, you know, that's what initially attracted me there. But, you know, God got a hold of my heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and I said yes to him. And at age 15, I said yes. And that's the same age I started doing drugs. Mm. I was already drinking already. I was 13 when I started actively drinking.
Yeah.
So it's like when 15 years old came, I said yes. It's like I took off the red jersey. Mm-hmm. I put on the blue jersey and totally unaware of it. But now the red team is trying to kill me now. And I was totally oblivious to it. I didn't even know. I was still baby, infant Christian.
Yeah.
You know, I was, you know, my parents drugged me to church every Sunday.
Yeah.
I didn't have a choice. So I was in quote unquote forced to learn. But in a way, just by being there and being somewhat receptive as a teenager and in my 20s, all those seeds was getting planted in me.
Yeah.
So they were in me. So when I got sober, I was 33. It's not like I forgot all this stuff and it went away and, you know, God's word was void all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I started watering it. I started getting around people that watered it as well, you know, help cultivate all those seeds. You know, it's like an apple tree. You hang around long enough, it's just a seed.
Yeah.
But if you hang around long enough, you know, you'll see me. You'll see it's an apple tree.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. So kind of a long answer, bro. So.
No, I think it's good, because again, the question to me is always about kind of like, that's why I frame it the way that I do, which is that who do you think that you are?
Yeah,
because it tells a lot about, because I can ask you that at any point in your life, right? I can ask you that 5 years ago, it'd probably be different than where it is right now, and I can ask you 5 years from now, and it's probably going to be different from where it is right now. Who you think that you are is really dependent on how often you think about yourself and the impact that you think that you make on the world as well. And so a lot of your story has a lot to do with how you identify as a believer in God, and also with your recovery as well, which are two very important pieces of what even our subject is that we're going to be talking about today. Now, I ask all of my interviewees, what would you like to talk about on the podcast? I ask every single one of them because I can talk about just about anything. I love to just talk, period. I'm a talker. I'm long-winded. So whatever anybody wants to talk about, especially related to God, the Bible, Christianity, anything of the sort, I'm all game. And when I asked you, the subject came up, I want to say, three different times. The first time when we first tried to plan it, you come up with the subject. Second time was when the last time we tried to come together and it fell through. And then this last time it was still coming up, which means that it's something that sits on your heart, which means it's something that you're passionate about, something you want to talk about. Tell me real quick, what do you want to talk about on this podcast?
So on this podcast, I would like to talk about specifically in regards to recovery. And God, or they call it higher power, you know, and kind of, you know, I'm very bold with this stuff. I don't pull punches, you know. Yeah. It's like what I believe, I believe. You guys don't got to send me emails or send me DMs. You know what I mean? This is what I believe, yeah. You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just because there's a lot of misconceptions, confusions, you know, as I see it, that's my belief, the things that I've seen in regards to recovery and everything. But yeah, I really would like to dive deep into this one for sure.
I love it. All right. It's going to be really cool. But before we jump into that, I feel like it's still, you're still the viewers. I mean, the listeners, excuse me, like they should be able to get to know you just a little bit more. Cause I mean, who's this guy? Aliku Gamba, who's this dude? I don't know who this guy is. I'm not sure why he should be qualified to speak into my life. So let's give him a little more background of who you are with this segment of my podcast that I like to call the 10 hardest questions ever. And then see how you do.
All right.
You ready?
Yep.
All right. First question. What was the last great movie that you watched?
Whoa. I have kids now, so TV is kind of out. But the last movie I actually watched was Black Adam. That was the last movie
Black
I watched.
Black Adam. And yeah. You liked it?
Oh, yeah. My cousin is in that movie. I love his movies. Yeah.
That's right.
You know, we're all Polynesian, so we're related somehow, you know.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. That movie was pretty cool. I liked it. I ended up watching it myself. All right, cool. Next question. If you had an extra $100,000, how would you spend it?
I would invest it.
Invest it. You don't know what, but you know you'd invest it.
I would invest it in the mutual fund and then just let it accrue interest. And then, boom, I'll just, you know, keep the principal there and you know, let the interest come. And then go with that. I can put it into different ways of helping others. Because I'm a big believer in my cup overflowing.
Yeah.
Not for the sake of, oh, me and my family have a great life.
Yeah.
It's for the sake of helping other people. That's why, you know.
Mm-hmm. I love it. That's great. Yeah. $100,000 is good enough to get you started. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next question. What is your biggest failure and what did you learn from it?
Oh, that is a great question, bro. I'm so glad you never told me you were going to ask me these questions.
Oh, yeah, I don't tell anybody. Yeah, they have to listen to the podcast. Yeah.
My greatest failure.
Your biggest failure and what did you learn from it?
My biggest failure. Oh, okay. My biggest failure, honestly, was getting so wrapped up in my pride, my arrogance, my I know attitude. And somewhere along my journey, what I did was I said, okay, God, I can operate in my own self-will. And God said, okay, no problem. Mm-hmm. You can do that.
Of course.
And so he allowed me to run in my own self-will. And I literally almost killed myself because of it. Mm-hmm. So the greatest lesson, I forgot what the rest of it was, but what I learned from that, bro, is that my way doesn't work.
How many times have we got to fail to learn that one?
Oh,
right?
Yeah, bro. Plenty bumps and bruises.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's good. I like that answer. Next. Who are the three people who have been the most influential to you?
Jesus, my dad, and Chief.
Wow. That's a
I never had to think about that.
That's a dynamic three right there. Those are some strong people.
Yeah.
Your dad, Bronson, is a strong individual.
Yes.
Love that, man. That's a good answer. I like that. It's three strong people that I know myself. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Usually people are talking about their moms that I don't know and stuff like that. All right, next question here. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
Honestly, it would be of my nonprofit organization, Pro Recovery Power, to help, you know, we help addicts and alcoholics, people that have mental health issues, you know, move our vision forward, go out and reach more people, because our mission is to reach the masses who suffer from drug and alcohol addiction, help them find their way out of darkness into the light and recover from addiction. So that's for sure. I never have to think about that. That's what I'll have up there.
Yeah. If you get free advertisement, you'll take it.
Oh, yeah. Like Mick says, bro, any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. I like that. All right, next. If you can turn back the time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell him?
I would tell him, build a relationship with Jesus. Oh, I get real emotional thinking about that, because that's literally what I would say. And but because people was telling me that, so much people around me at that age was telling me to do that. And I like goes back to my pride, my arrogance, my I know attitude. Oh, yeah, I know. I will. Look, I go to church. But it was just really going through the motions. You know, I really wasn't. My heart really wasn't in it. You know, I was going to church because it was an obligation in the beginning as a kid, as a teenager. But that's definitely what I would tell my old self. You know, somebody today, this kid who was in one of my groups. Mm-hmm. I'm a group facilitator in different treatment centers. He told me today, it was today, he said, he wrote me a message and he said, you know, I want to stay sober and I want to be more like you. And like he said, what do I have to do? Mm-hmm. So this question you just asked me, that's the exact answer I gave him. I told him, bro, more than anything, what I have done to get to where I am today is I built a relationship with Jesus, bro.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
You know, that is the greatest advice, direction, suggestion I could give any human being on the planet. Like, hey, you got a drug problem? Build a relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. You got a money problem? Build a relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. You get one, whatever, marriage problem, you know, money problem, yeah. kid problem,
yep.
alcohol problem, any problem, you know, because that's the source. You know, I'm the created,
yeah.
and I'm not the creator, so I cannot tell myself, you know, why I was created.
That's right.
You know, I gotta either, like my phone, like I either gotta go talk to Apple or read the manual, which is basically the creator saying, read my mind.
Yeah.
This is the purpose of it. And my phone kind of, one day phone's going to tell us we'll be able to talk to us, no problem, you know,
sure.
but
yeah.
right now, you know, it can't, you
yeah.
know.
Mm-hmm. That's good, man. I like that answer. Find the root to all of our issues also has a root solution, which is Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to talk to 18-year-old self. Whether he'd listen or not is another thing.
Yeah, that's another thing.
All right, next question here. What is your best tip for making the world a better place? Maybe you've already answered that.
Oh yeah. Honestly, I learned this. It's a people principle I learned from John Maxwell, and he says there's the golden rule and the platinum rule. He says the golden rule in regards to people is treat others the way that you want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I've heard that one for years growing yep. up, and I never heard this one. The platinum rule, he says, is treat other people the way they want to be treated, because not everybody wants to be treated the way I want to be treated.
Yeah.
So taking the time to think about somebody more than myself, it takes effort, it takes intentionality, it takes time to build a relationship with somebody, know what they like, what they don't like, and everything. And that's honestly every chance I get, like I try to do that with Mike, you know, and like because he's here, he's there, he's all over the place, so you know, he's doing a lot of things, but just to you know, because I was taught to build relationships, go wide and drive those relationships deep, you know. Yeah,
that's good. I like that. Treat them the way that they want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. I like that one. All right. Yeah, three more questions. What would you pick for a last meal? Alika's a full-blown murderer. It's done. His time is done. It's time to put him down. What's going to be the last meal for Alika?
My last meal would be a mid-rare ribeye.
Mid-rare ribeye?
Mid-rare ribeye with rice. Lots of rice.
A bunch of rice, huh?
Yeah.
That's good. I like that. That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Vacation exploring or vacation relaxing?
It depends if my wife and kids are with me. But if it's just literally up to me, I would love exploring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing I struggle with a lot is because I'm a doer. I'm like, go, 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 go. And then somebody recently told me, hey, the fastest way to where you want to go is slowly. I'm like, ooh. More than one person been telling me that. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, God, I hear what you're saying. You know, because we can miss, you know, a lot of things, you know, in between, you know, getting from point A to point B, trying to be efficient. That's like, I try to live my life and be so efficient so I can be more effective, so I can expand God's kingdom, so I can help people recover and help them change their lives. But you know, I'm a adventurer, but I can also relax too, you know?
Maybe you can combo both then.
Yeah,
that's good. All right, last question. What does the words set free mean to you?
Set free, what those two words means to me, it means that because I literally was set free, and specifically where I was set free was when I was working my steps with my sponsor, was specifically in my fourth step. Because I found out in this process, the drug and the drink wasn't even my problem. It was the solution to all my problems. So being set free, that fourth step was designed to introduce me to who I really am. Mm. Not to who I think I am, who other people say I am, but who I am. You know, I was already, I learned how to be honest. My mind was open and I was willing. I was really willing. So when I got to see what I was like, you know, I had proof on paper in my own handwriting. I no longer was a victim. Because having a victim mentality, learning how to, as a young kid, I learned how to avoid a negative consequence, and that was by lying. Mm-hmm. I learned how to cheat as a young kid, like kindergarten, first grade. Remember that game, Heads Up, Seven Up? I don't know mm-hmm. if you guys played it here.
I did.
Yeah, so, you know, I would put my arm on the desk, and then, you know, I would leave space so I can see somebody walking by me. Mm-hmm. So when somebody puts my thumb down, I'm looking at their shoes. Mm. So when they stand up, I can look, oh, who's wearing those green shoes? Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I had the victim mentality. I learned how to cheat. I learned how to lie to avoid a negative consequence way before a drug or drink entered my body.
Yeah.
So... But then once I got into my addiction, you know, addiction grows progressively worse if not treated. Mm. And that's exactly what happened to me. It wasn't just the alcohol consumption increased, the drug increased. Bro, like everything got worse. Was that the drug, the drink? It was my finances got worse. My relationships got worse. My mental health got worse. My spiritual health got worse. Everything got worse for me. So in that fourth step, it set me free, and I got set free from me. Mm. me, because the entire time I was the problem.
Yeah.
The entire time. I seen it for myself. It no longer was all my ex-girlfriends or the state of Hawaii or the police department or my dad or my mom or my brother. It was me. It was revealed to me that the problem I was suffering from was me. And it was me. What I mean by that is it was the way my thinking, my cognition, mm-hmm. That was my problem. And I was set free, because when I said yes to Jesus, I'll tell you one story.
Yeah.
I remember when I was newly sober, there were people in my fellowship that did not believe in God the Father. Mm-hmm. And I was okay, you know, okay, I get it. And then they would ask me questions. I knew what they were doing. They would ask, they're basically poking me. I knew what they were saying. They were saying, wait, if you're a Christian, how are you addicted to drugs and alcohol for 20 years? I'm like, huh? You see this flesh suit I'm wearing or what?
Yeah.
But they don't understand that. But sure. So what they were saying is, see, Jesus don't work. These don't work, bro. Church don't work.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what they were telling me. So I never had no rebuttal. I was so new. But as I got to learn more, I got to grow more. I stayed sober longer. I recovered more. This is what I would have said if I knew it back then. Is that when I said yes to Jesus, my spirit was instantly saved.
Yeah.
There was something that wasn't saved though.
Yeah.
That was my mind. Mm. My mind needed saving. It still does. Mm-hmm. So this is the problem. My spirit, the Bible talks about that, the Holy Spirit being our guide. God tucks things away and hides it. My life is hidden with Christ in my anointing. And so God knows everything about me, everything. The Holy Spirit knows everything. It's all in me. But this is the huge problem I had. My spirit doesn't make decisions. My mind makes all the decisions. Mm. So that's why I got into the mess I got in. You know, it's like this big misconception that once you say yes to Jesus, your life's supposed to be great. Nah, yeah. Not really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. like, no, don't get me wrong. It is. It's great, especially the ticket that was purchased by the blood of Jesus when I said yes and I became a co-heir. Oh, yeah. When you like, I'll be up there in my mansion one day. But until then, you know, I'll be here. I'll be continuing to do what I believe God wants me to do while I'm on this earth. You know, so that's what I think when I hear set free. Well, I mean, honestly, I think of Chief.
Sure.
I think of Chief. But when you ask me the question specifically like that, like immediately, I knew what the answer was going to be.
Yeah, I love it.
Everybody has a different kind of idea what set free means. Some people, they attach it to the ministry. Some people attach it to the words themselves. And a lot of people attach it to their own personal experiences of what it means to be set free. So many of us understand, at least as believers, we know what the feeling of being able to be bonded up to something is, whether it be in our past or whether it be even currently. Some people are still struggling with certain addictions, not specifically just substance abuse. Yep. But being able to know those things, what it feels like to be set free from those, it comes, the whole entire feeling comes along with that. And so to be able to hear the answer from certain people, or all people, to be able to hear kind of like what they think set free means, it's always a little bit different, but it's always revolves around the same thing, mm-hmm. which is the feeling of, man, freedom is a beautiful thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Spiritual freedom is a mm-hmm. wonderful thing to have. Which ends our segment on the 10 hardest questions ever.
All right. That was great. You got to create 10 more, bro. Yeah, I like this.
You like that?
I like this.
I can get 10 more harder questions, I'm sure. All right. So when we had talked, you had said that you wanted to talk about the subject of higher power inside of the world of recovery. Now, for myself, I am not in substance abuse recovery, but I've let people know that I am recovery, trying to recover my spirit, what I was made for. And I feel like, given that information, I'm in the exact same group that everybody else is in, which my circle happens to be a bunch of people that are in substance abuse recovery. And the connection that I have with people is very much is like, we're all trying to get something that's bigger than ourselves. We're all going for something that's that is God ordained. And not self-ordained. And so because of that, I still relate so heavily on everything else other than the Anthony alcoholic. I don't get to say that. I have to say Anthony support. And given that information, that's literally the only thing that makes me different. Other than that, I feel the same pains. And I get to be in the same rooms because of my work and also my circle and everybody else. So I've become relatively familiar with the world of recovery and the world of people in AA and NA and anybody else in recovery. Also, and the rumblings, it was new for me, as it was for a lot of people, I'm sure, when they first came around. But for me, it was very new for me to be able to walk into a room and people talk about the concept of higher power. What is that? Oh, God. Oh, you mean God? Okay, I understand what you're saying. It's like, whoa, not God per se. Higher power can be whatever it is that you want your higher power to be, as long as it's not you. I got into this like really kind of strange understanding, like kind of a confusing state as to what that might have meant. Because obviously me being raised in the church and everything, and me being a full-blown believer and bent over backwards trying to like really establish that within myself, that when somebody said the words higher power, my brain only went to one place. I can understand when other people started giving other like different religions and things of the sort, but I wasn't really hearing other religions. I was hearing other weird things. And one of the ones that always sticks out to me, and a lot of people quote it to this day still, is that God can be anything and even be a doorknob. And it was like, I didn't understand that concept.
I still don't, bro. I still don't.
And so when you and I had a very, very, very brief conversation about what it is you wanted to talk about, it sounded like you kind of wanted to talk about that. It sounded like you wanted to talk about what higher power meant inside of recovery. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little bit more on what it is you'd like to talk about today?
Yeah, sure. So in recovery, I respect how the program works. I do. I understand it. That doesn't necessarily mean I agree with everything, sure. You know? And so in the 12-step culture, people get to pick their God.
Yeah.
But prior to walking into these rooms, I already learned that God, the Father, the Creator, He's a jealous God.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So that one, I was like, ooh. That one was like, it was a little awkward.
So it kind of challenged you a little bit when you walked into the rooms.
Oh, big time, bro. Okay. You know, I was all screwed up, but I can't be talking about how great my God is because look where I am, like to everybody else. You know what I mean? I say, you know, work. That's why. That's why you're here.
I wanted to ask you that about your like kind of a little bit of your experiences and stuff, and we'll do that after the break. But I definitely want to talk about what it was like when you walk into the room and try and talk about God and stuff. But what are you seeing the problems are? What is your name, and is it possible to recover without God?
My name is Jackie. I think whatever higher power you have is really important, because like, what's the point if you don't have something bigger and guiding you and protecting you? It's a new thing for me, actually. Like, I've never had a higher power before, but lately, like, I've been going to church, like, I've been praying. I come here, and it's changed my recovery more than like the 9 months that I had. I've got 53 days now, and it's totally different, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
I love it.
My name is Andrew Kiernan, and I think it is absolutely not impossible to, it's not possible to recover without God.
Yeah. Why?
Because you can try and do all of this on your own, and you will find that you can't do it. You need the fellowship, you need your higher power, you need God. God's going to guide you through it, whether you're going through a good time or a bad time. He's always going to be there for you through the ups and downs.
Brian Bond is my name, and I don't think it's possible without God.
Why not?
I've tried everything else myself. I went every different route I could possibly take. I've tried the different like spiritual melodies that didn't involve God, like crystal healing, Reiki, stuff like that. It took me to a couple months, and then I always relapse. I'd always go back to my old ways. Once I found God, everything changed. I kind of just learned who I was as a person. My morals changed. My characteristics changed. Everything about myself changed for the better. I learned how to love. I learned how to heal properly, and I learned how to let go of unwanted trauma. Yeah,
I love it.
My name is Linda, and I don't know any other way to do it without God. Mm-hmm. That's my even my when I go to sponsor, my sponsors have it has to be their higher power. I can't teach them how to do it any other way, because mm-hmm. That's the way it's done to me. Mm-hmm. You know.
My name is Melanie, and I think no, it isn't. Just because when there's no one else to turn to, God is the person that will hear you out. He will take that pain away from you when no one else wants to, and He guides you through your recovery and makes you feel better about even the worst days and the best days.
My name is Mike. No, I don't think so. When I first came in, you know, I didn't really know what recovery was or what I was getting into. I met Alika, actually, and he introduced me to God, to church, and it brought me in. And, you know, I had this big idea of, you know, like, I was scared of God.
Yeah.
I'd never been introduced to it, though, and I learned God is love. And all my life, that's all I was craving.
Yeah.
And luckily, through God, I found that. I found a friend. I found someone who knows me better than I do, and I was saved.
My name is Elizabeth Ngadi. I don't know. Personally, I grew up in church and always went to youth group, church camp, all that stuff. Like, my family was, like, super involved in, like, church and stuff. But my addiction, I kind of, like, lost my relationship with God, and right now I'm trying to, like, rebuild that relationship. But I see how it goes for people who don't have a relationship with God and don't have a higher power in the picture, their sobriety, and I don't know, it doesn't usually go too good. But I don't think it's possible. I think you have to have a higher power. Mine is God, so.
I love it. That was great. That was great. That was an awesome answer.
Well, just speaking as a believer, as a Christian, as somebody that has said yes to Jesus, accepted him as Lord and Savior, you know, stepping out of the founder of PRP, a person in recovery, literally just a man that was saved by the grace of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm speaking from right now. And, you know, I see this, bro. I mean, and this is true, but there's something wrong with this. Me personally, I've been sober for 6 years. I've been around the rooms for 6 years. I still go to meetings. I will go to meetings to the day I die. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
And so, I have met more honest people in 12-step programs than I met in church.
Yep.
Oh, big time. But see, there's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah,
it's
right?
Not supposed to be that way. You know?
Yeah, it's true.
And, you know, this whole thing of I never understood this. Even if I didn't have a conception of God when I got sober, it still wouldn't have made sense to me, because if I can invent God, then I got the power.
Yeah.
But I just admitted I was powerless in the first step. How does that work? You know, kind of thing.
Kind of contradicts itself.
Yeah, like in a way, like, I understand, like, because it's not like I know a lot. I didn't get sober in AA, mm-hmm. but I know a lot about it.
Yeah.
I know a lot about it. I worked steps through that, though, even though I wasn't in AA.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the time to get to know more so the founders. I have literature on Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, his wife Lois, about them, not about recovery steps and all this stuff, and to really trip people up sometimes in meetings, because
yeah.
everybody knows who my God is. I'm not a closet Christian.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So and I used to do this a while ago in meetings when I knew the crowd, I knew who wasn't a believer and things like that. Because for some reason, if you say Jesus, God, scripture, Bible, everybody's mind snaps shut.
Yeah.
But they can talk about their God and the doorknob and the chair being their higher power. Then everybody's all, you know, so I never understood that.
Yeah.
But the Bible does say Jesus is the rock of offense to the disobedient.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? So if I can invent God, I got the power, but I just admitted I was powerless. Now, for me, trying to, even if I didn't believe in God, it would have been hard for me to probably find a higher power of my own understanding, because if you're going to allow me to create my God, guess what? I'm getting away with everything.
Yeah, right.
Everything.
My God's cool with whatever it is
I can do something wrong all the time and get away with it, and then there's no consequence or something, nothing like that.
Sure.
You know, but in a way, not to sound contradicting, because my God I serve is a lot like that. Mm-hmm. His grace and mercy. Mm-hmm. You know, something I found out, I thought it was the same thing. His grace is him giving me something that I don't deserve, and his mercy is him giving me, is him not giving me something that I do deserve.
Yeah.
Like, I deserve to be locked up for the rest of my life, all the stuff I've done,
yeah,
all the people I've hurt, all the damage I did, all the kind of trauma I caused in other people's lives and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's like, my decisions I was making, it was like this ripple effect that was happening. I make the decision, and because it was a like a negative of negative nature, it's like this ripple effect that started, like all these bullets started coming back toward me, and God stood right in the way, and he let his mercy hit it all. You know, I mean, I experienced some, but not to the extent that I deserved it.
Yeah.
You know, not at all. So like, that's something that I didn't really understand. And but the greatest thing I believe, bro, because this is how the God I serve is anyway, mm-hmm, is that the program, 12-step culture, 12-step programs, the probably the greatest thing about them, in my opinion, is that we get to choose.
Yeah.
It's free will. Mm-hmm. That's how God created us.
Yeah.
See, God wants us to say yes, but he ain't gonna make us say yes.
Yeah.
There's so much power in that. A program of literally, well, it's supposed to be suggestion, you know, not, you know, I've heard stories.
Yeah.
But that's how it's designed. That's how it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a program of suggestion. Like with my sponsor, bro, to this day, my sponsor has never, ever told me what to do. Never.
Yeah.
He's very good with his words. And I remember my first meeting I ever went to, after it was over, this big black guy, bro, he beelines it right to me. There was like, I don't know, 10 newcomers in the room.
Yeah.
And I was one of them. And he came straight to me out of everybody. And he shook my hand. He bought me my book. I still got. He gave me his phone number. And he said, here, call this guy. And then that guy became my sponsor 4 days later. And he's still my sponsor to this day.
Yeah.
And the reason why it has been so effective for me, because typically, like what is taught is you go to meetings, you go to a bunch of meetings, you listen to all these guys or all these girls speak, and you go approach them, ask them to be a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't my case. I believe God literally handpicked my sponsor for me, because I that was my first meeting I ever went to.
Yeah.
And so, because I was very, very, very defiant. I had bold resistance against authority.
Mm.
So if you told me go left, I'm going to go right. Guarantee. Yeah. So, but because my sponsor, he allowed me to have my own experiences, meaning even if he knew I was going to fall off a cliff, I was going to stub my toe, I was going to fall down, he didn't grab me by my shirt and, hey, bro, don't do that. No, do this.
Yeah.
Nah, he allowed me to have my own experience, and I got to learn from him, and I got to make adjustments. But not all the time. There were some things he thought I was gonna hurt myself, but it turned out, oh, no, it worked out good, you know, for me too, you know. And so by him not threatening my free will, I believe that's why it was so effective, because nobody made me drink and use drugs, and nobody made me recover. I was willing to do both, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that like everything you're talking about, it really kind of like comes out of this place of the idea of free will, right? And when you're thinking about, and this is two extremes, and I understand this, so I'm not trying to get into this weird conversation of the in-between of this. I understand the extremes. The extreme of believing in Jesus Christ, which is like you said, it's offensive, right? It's like the only name that'll make people flinch. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ, right? And on the other end is a doorknob, which I still don't get, but at the same time, I understand the analogy. What the people are saying is that it can't be you. Saying the higher power, it can't be you. But there's more to that. It's not just about the it can't be you part, it also has to give some sort of direction, right? So doorknob doesn't really give much direction. So again, that's an extreme, and I'm sure nobody really has a higher power as a doorknob. If they do, then I'd love to meet them and talk to them about their higher power. But I doubt that that's specifically what we're talking about. But anything on the in-between, these different spiritual senses in the middle of it, people being able to create their own version of God, which inside of Christianity, people do that all the time also, right? They kind of create their own version of God. They don't read their Bible, do nothing like that. Yeah, they just kind of create their own version of God. Jesus loves me very much, and he doesn't really need me to change or anything of the sort. He just loves me exactly how I am. And the acceptance is true. The leaving you where you are, not so true. And we know that by just reading our Bible, that he expects us to be able to grow. So for people that are in recovery, sensitive, because people in recovery are in sensitive states in their life. The whole entire world looking at them as though they're like, you know, destroying everything around themselves and destroying themselves. And a lot of people inside of substance abuse are beelining towards suicide. And that's just kind of just the fact of the matter, right? When it gets to this place where it's like, all right, how do you introduce a higher power to somebody? The Jesus Christ thing, we know, has like this is a religious trauma attached to that. Mm-hmm. Most people, especially in this country, they wince at the idea of Jesus because it reminds them of their super critical aunt or their mom or dad that forced them to go to church, or that teacher, that person that made them feel like trash one time because they said something about Jesus and they're going to hell. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that comes into the mix and kind of throws people off. That now what it turns into is the word, who Jesus Christ is, represents control to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the way that you just explained it has a lot more to do with free will. Yeah. Being able to do whatever it is that you deem to be fine or worthy, but also to be keeping in consideration what God thinks of where you should be going. Mm-hmm. To be saying, this is what God thinks, this is what I think. Let's see who wins when it comes to the results. And being able to kind of see that happening inside the rooms, it gets a little funny at times, where you do hear people talking about different spiritualities and things of the sort. And I will say, not as often as other times, but sometimes when spiritual senses are coming up, or even people saying that I don't really have a spiritual kind of higher power per se. My higher power is the universe. My higher power is a different version of myself that I haven't met. Everybody has this different version of what higher power means. But when it comes down to at least Christianity is a built-in, not just institution, but a full-blown belief system that has a lot of things that end up backing it up in such a specific type of way that, man, Christianity seems to be like a surefire bet. Like, especially to somebody like us, I'm not naive to the fact that both you and I are biased when it comes to talking about this. You and I believe in Jesus Christ. If I'm not mistaken, we're both raised in the church, which means that we have a whole entire life to back us up. When it comes to the idea of us believing in Jesus, it's probably just the most comfortable thing that we got. But I would also be naive to dismiss the fact that there are a lot of people that I know that did was not raised in the church, and their lives have been changed, I would say, sometimes more dramatically than my own. Mm-hmm. And being able to see that, I end up seeing more proof in the pudding, if you would, and other people that end up coming to believe in Jesus Christ. Why do you think that people keep it at a distance? Why do you think people keep Jesus out the rooms at times? Why do you think it makes them flinch? Why do you think they dislike this concept of Jesus Christ being inside this idea of higher power for certain people?
It can be, a lot of different things, like the religious trauma you talked about. Yeah. I think that's probably the number one thing that... Yeah. People who represented God was actually a misrepresentation. And the person that wasn't saved yet thought that, oh, Jesus is like that? Nah, I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know? And like, I've met people in the rooms in recovery, generally speaking, that have different gods. And that's cool. I'm friends with them and stuff. Yeah. And like, but some of these people, they're like, you know, like, I got to die for my God. We got to sacrifice, like, our religion. We sacrifice ourselves for our God. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, bro. My guy died for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He died. He paid the price so I don't have to.
Yeah.
Okay, when you so you can never say the wrong thing to the right person. When you're having a conversation with someone and that comes up and they go, What? That'll get somebody's attention.
Yeah.
That their whole life believed that I was supposed to die for my God, you know? And I really do, bro. I believe there is but one true God. You know, a lot of people think God and the devil are enemies.
Sure.
Like you know, when he was Lucifer, there was no all the arrogance, the pride, and the Satan wanted to be God. Mm-hmm. There was no cosmic battle in heaven. God batted his eyes. He was gone. You know what I mean? God doesn't have any equals. That's why. And there is one thing, though, I found in the Bible that talks about being something that's being the enemy of God. And the Bible said it's a carnal mind. So to relate that, so everybody understand what I'm saying, an unrenewed mind. An unrenewed mind will always fight against God. That's why. Yeah. Even though we're made in God's image, my mind needed to be, like I said, need saving. It needed to be renewed constantly.
Yeah.
You know, because faith come by hearing and hearing by the word of God.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only place I found it, you know, really, where it's stuck. But I think that's what I would say. I think the Holy Spirit's like, hey, you said enough, bro.
On that topic. That's good. I like that. When it comes down to like trying to, because it's honestly with your conversation about what it means to believe in higher power or believe in God, it doesn't really like stop at the rooms. It goes way beyond that, actually. Mm-hmm. The rooms is actually just kind of like a convoluted place of like a bunch of people coming together trying to figure out what to do, mm-hmm. trying to figure out a solution of sorts, right? And the solution's right in front of people that are showing up in those rooms also. And A, the 12 steps are a surefire way to being able to stay sober, 100%. But we understand that sobriety is different than recovery. That once you get sobriety and you're abstinence, that's great. Like, that's mm-hmm. a check mark, right? And that's a huge feat.
Yeah.
But after that requires a lot more than that, a lot more than abstinence. Like, are we paying attention to our character defects? Are we really trying to change? Are we learning? Are we growing? What direction are we growing towards? All these things are big questions and like big directions. And what always comes up to me, because once you get to that point, you're part of the rest of the world that's actually trying to do something. So once an addict becomes sober, mm-hmm. it's like, all right, welcome to the world then by that point, right? Everybody else, it kind of cuts out into two different lines of people, which most people don't fall into the minority here. But the majority of people, they're not really trying to figure out their character defects and trying to grow.
Mm-hmm.
In general, they're not. But a lot of people inside of sobriety and recovery, they are actually trying to figure out what their character defects and how to grow. The question from that point ends up becoming, if you can create your own higher power, what is your higher power challenging you to do? What is this higher power trying to get you to grow to, or what are they trying to make you become? What gets your brain going on that?
Yeah, so it kind of goes back to, you talked about the doorknob, mm-hmm. and that's a good point you brought up too, because the doorknob and like the doorknob kind of give direction. Like mm-hmm. a higher power should give some sort of direction, you know what I mean? And I have a book to draw from.
Mm.
Like if your group, your higher power is a group as a whole, or it's the doorknob or the chair or the universe, did the universe ever write a book with directions on how to live life or anything? You know what I mean? Like, like I got some ammo, you know what I mean?
I think that you're right. It's being able to kind of like come back to this, where's the direction coming from? Like what direction is my higher power pointing me to? And that's the important thing, right? It's like, I understand that when I'm believing in Jesus Christ, when I believe in God, it's not just about getting me out of something, but it's getting me towards something. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily just about me getting like, oh, I got to stop my filthy brain from doing these filthy things and stop me from being an awful person. It's not necessarily about that as much as it is the second half of it, mm-hmm. which is how to be a helpful person, how to be a loving person, how to be these types of things. So the idea of inside the rooms and the 12 steps, it's being able to get a person to stop being awful. Right? It's like stop being filthy and all these different things. The same way my Bible tells me stop being a terrible, selfish person, right? It's the same thing. Now you got to kind of like a zero. Instead of a -2, you've worked yourself to a -1 and now you're at a zero. Good, neutral.
Yeah.
Now, how do I get to the positive? And that's what it is that I'm trying to learn when I read my Bible. It's not just about how me stopping from doing something, because I can stop doing something, but I'm not helpful to the world. Jesus helps me to stop doing something, and then he helps me being helpful to the world and being loving to the world. In the 12 steps, I think it really helps people to get to zero, to stop. But then after that point, it really does lean in your spiritual understanding, your awakening, to really know where you're going to go from here. Because it doesn't tell you what success looks like. 12 steps doesn't say, this is what success looks like. Make sure you're rich and you have this thing and that thing and you're going to church and all these things. It doesn't necessarily lean into that. It leans into how to stop, which does its job. That's what 12 steps is supposed to do. And then hopefully what it's always trying to do is tie you to your higher power, your spiritual awakening, so then you can now from that point figure out where you're going from here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different people kind of stop before that spiritual awakening. They stop before that moment where they know where to go. They know what to stop, but they don't know what to start.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with this idea of what can a doorknob teach me? Mm-hmm. What does a doorknob teach me to start? It's not just about stopping who it is that I am. It's about who should I become then?
Yeah. Identity.
And, yeah, identity, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what ends up happening inside the rooms a lot. And again, coming completely out of the rooms, let's just open it up to the rest of the world, is whatever your spirituality is, if the only thing that it's about is for it to stop you from doing something and not necessarily teaching you what you should be doing, how to be helpful, well, then maybe your spirituality isn't 100%. Maybe it's not truly inviting you into the solution. Maybe it's not inviting you into a place where you can become a part of something bigger than just yourself. Because again, I'm told all the time that, yeah, I'm not doing enough. Yeah, I'm actually causing harm. I'm actually destroying. I'm not creating, I'm only destroying. For me to be able to create and to be able to believe in such a huge and higher power than myself and actually have a direction, my Bible tells me where I'm going, that helps me so much because it tells me this is the direction that I should go. And this is the reason as to why when somebody talked about a doorknob being a higher power, it threw me off. Again, I understand the doorknob isn't you. That's the point. Don't be you. Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks. But what should I be is the question. And in your walk, inside of whether it be 12 steps or whether it be outside of 12 steps, have you found Christianity or at least believing in God to be way more helpful than anything else?
Oh, absolutely, bro. So there's one sentence in the big book. It's the chapter to the agnostic, bro. It sums up any 12-step program for me.
Yeah.
It says, its main objective is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem.
Yeah.
And it didn't say stop your drinking or your drugging or this or that, you know, because I was far beyond human aid. No human power could save me already. I needed God to intervene in my life, and he did.
Yeah.
So there's a... like you said earlier, there's two things, sobriety and recovery, and they're different. They're not the same.
Yeah.
There's only two things that I know of that sobriety ever did for me. Like Mick said, sobriety sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know?
I can attest to that.
I get it, but there's two things. There's only two things I can think of that sobriety, the benefits of sobriety all by itself. The first one was my physical body got a chance to heal itself,
yes,
which is positive. It's good.
Yeah.
The second thing is, since I have been sober, I've saved $110,200 since I've been sober.
Wow.
Yeah. So money. I mean, and that was just drinks and drugs. That wasn't, because it was my thinking. It wasn't all the drinks I bought for everybody else because I'm codependent. I want to be accepted. I want to be part of. Mm-hmm. No, none of that. No, not all these girls I'm trying to wine and dine and things I'm buying I don't even need. You know what I mean? Because I never had a drinking problem. It was always a thinking problem that manifested into a drink problem, drug problem, anger problem, control problem. It all originated in my mind first. So, sobriety, it's in order for us to receive everything recovery was designed to give, or the life God sent his son for us to die for, to have.
Yeah.
We got to stay sober. People like me, like, we got to stay sober. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I would say like us, but
I agree. I still agree. Yeah.
We got to stay sober first. Sobriety is not the goal. Sobriety is the foundation we're going to build our life on.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I never did anything, bro, outside of my fellowship for 2 years. I never did nothing, bro. I said no to the barbecue, to going here, going to my brother's house and they're barbecuing and all this stuff. I put my head down and I got into the work, the recovery work. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Meetings every day. Had commitments at four out of the seven meetings I went to once a week. I had an area level commitment. I was the special events chair for the West Inland Empire at 1.2. And so that's what sobriety did. Now, recovery, it fixed all the things in me that was broken, you know, so to speak. Recovery was designed to make me a better human being, period.
Yeah.
However, now, Alcoholics Anonymous was the first 12-step program to ever exist. Dr. Bob was a believer already. He would have the Bible in meetings back in the 30s.
Yeah.
And I never finished saying this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because when certain meetings I'll go to kind of trip people up, because I did my research, I did my homework, I got to know Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and Lewis and Abby Thatcher and all these guys. So, but I know for sure, I would say this sometimes when I know who's in the room, I go, man, it's so awesome to know that, you know, me, Bill Wilson, and Dr. Bob, we have the same higher power.
You're just trying to piss people off.
Yeah, because like, you know, but I understood why they started it that way because they didn't want it to be, you know, it would just be like church to everybody. That's why, yeah, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I understand. I get it. You know, I understand why they did it that way, you know? But I took the time to get to know the founders, not just go through my steps and okay, cool, these guys are cool with this or that. But I got to really, know them. And not a lot of people knows that.
Yeah.
You know, about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. You know, they really don't. But, you know, again, we get to choose. I mean, like, you know, this is another thing in the literature that I have. It talks about without the Bible being written, that big book would never have been written, and there will be no 12-step programs today, basically.
It's true.
All the principles came right out of the Bible. They used the entire book of James. They used Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew 5, 6, 7, that one. Mm-hmm. And then 1 Corinthians 13, which describes love.
Yeah.
That was the foundation to write that whole entire book, basically.
Yeah.
Like if I knew my Bible pretty good, actually, by then, I'm not saying I practiced it.
Yeah, sure.
I knew it, though. Yeah. So when I started getting into the work, I'm like, wait, that's in the Bible. It might be, some things might have been worded different, but yeah, hey, that's in the Bible. The principle is the same, you know? So it's funny, people who said no to Jesus, who shun God and no, I don't want to be a part of that, they're getting sober and staying sober off biblical principles.
Yeah, right.
You know, they don't even know it.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so this whole thing about sobriety, learning how to stop, all that stuff, and then recovery, it helped me. I should make this clear. Anytime I'm speaking, me personally, when I'm speaking about recovery,
yeah,
I'm speaking about God.
Yeah.
Because God is not in recovery. Mm. Recovery is in God.
Oh, wow.
You know, so that's why, just to make that clear.
Yeah.
Like recovery was designed to make me a better human being. It's designed to help me stop those behaviors.
Mm.
Sobriety never helped me do none of that. It just helped me stop drinking and drugging.
Yeah.
So stop the behaviors and then replace them with biblical, godly, moral, you know, being a moral person. I was morally corrupt big time, bro.
Yeah.
You know, because my mind was broken, like medically speaking and spiritually speaking, my mind was broken. Because what addiction does, it targets the midbrain. The midbrain is in charge of our survival. So the longer the drink or the drug is a stable presence in the human body, our midbrains will recognize it as something we need to survive, even though it's killing us, because the midbrain is neutral. It doesn't know good, bad, right, wrong, up, down, all that stuff. And it sends all the signals to the prefrontal cortex, the place of our brain we use to make decisions. That's where logic lives.
Mm-hmm.
All faulty. It seems like we cannot make good decisions.
Mm.
So my mind literally was broken in that sense, you know, and that's why it's so important. I was just talking about this today, about healing. It is so important for us to heal. I believe in the Bible, in recovery, in God, in Jesus, in the 12 steps. I believe healing is embedded in that whole entire process.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing. If we do not heal, we will bleed on all the people that didn't cut us.
Yeah.
We'll make the next person pay for what the last person did. And it's an impossibility for us to heal and start to make better decisions if we're hanging on to all our past hurts, pains, resentment, unforgiveness, bitterness. It's an impossibility to heal. So we got to let that go. This is what recovery is teaching me now. God is teaching me. Letting all that stuff go. And you know, today I gave the example, because there was new people, there's like five new people in my group, and a lot of people get this misconception or they get this idea that sobriety and recovery is the same, but it's not.
Yeah.
So I kind of broke it down a little, and explained what sobriety was and then recovery. I just gave them this one example and then they're kind of like, huh, what? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Recovery is more about this. It's more about, let's say you call someone friend. I'm your friend, you're my friend.
Mm.
And the same friend violates your trust and stabs you in the back. Recovery, teaches me to turn around, forgive the person, and move on. Don't hang on to that, especially if I'm in the process of healing,
because
I cannot heal hanging on to all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that fourth step, like I said, it set me free of me. You know, I was able to see where I was at. I was 33 years old. I was able to see where I was at, and I was able to take responsibility for everything in my life. Prior to that, it was my dad's fault. It was everybody's fault but mine.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's like that victim mentality I already had before I started drinking and using, like, even if it's like a legit thing, like I was sexually abused, or my mom left when I was a kid, and or it was just fancied, it was just made up in my mind, I'm a victim. Either way, victim mentality is victim mentality.
Yeah.
And it's an impossibility to stay sober if you have that way of thinking, because you can always blame somebody else.
Yeah.
Shift the blame, point the finger, it's not my fault, this fault, da, da, da. And then growth is literally impossible at that point. We cannot grow, you know, grow along spiritual lines. But the growth process started in recovery. Well, started in recovery, but then there was other areas I decided to grow in. I decided to grow in my finances, my relationship, my marriage, my leadership, my entrepreneur endeavors, because I have mentors. I don't have one mentor. Mm-hmm. However, it took me 2.5 years to work all 12 steps. I went through that thing thoroughly.
Yeah.
And so I never went and sought out outside help yet. Mm-hmm. And because when I was newly sober, I spent my first year in a sober living up in Fontana in the IE. And I was walking home from work and I was talking to my dad. And basically, my dad was basically contradicting things that my sponsor was telling me, but I was like, "Dad, it's working. Like, what are you talking about? It's working." Mm-hmm. See, my dad never struggled with drugs and alcohol before, so I never went and sought out other people to come and help me and pour into my life, because there was a possibility of them tripping me up, me going, "Well, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. Maybe I'm not a, you know, maybe I'm not that. Maybe no, I'm good. I'm okay." You know, I waited till I worked all 12 steps. And of course, it's never done. We 10, 11, 12 on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I waited before. I mean, I sought out these other mentors in my life. I waited for my steps to be complete. Then I did that because I didn't want that to trip me up. You know, I didn't want nobody, because I admire like my mentors. I you know, I have love and respect for them. And out of the love and respect, I can go listen to them and not listen to my sponsor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's the one that. So I only have one mentor that struggled with drugs, and that's Chief.
Yeah.
You know. My other mentors, so I have somebody that guides and directs me in my marriage, in my finances, in my leadership, and in my entrepreneurial endeavors. Chief is the only one that struggled with drugs.
Yeah.
All my other ones, I never go to them for anything substance abuse related or alcoholism or nothing.
Yeah.
You know, my sponsor, that's the guy I go to. So, I mean, there were times when I was working my steps where, honestly, bro, I turned my sponsor into my marriage counselor. Mm. I turned him into my financial advisor, because I didn't know certain things, and he wasn't opposed to it. He just like gave me the best answers he could, the best guidance he could, you know. But I waited specifically, and honestly, if you're in recovery and you're listening to this right now, I would highly encourage you guys to complete your steps first before you go out and seek outside help. Because, like I said, my sponsor, he couldn't. He wasn't a marriage counselor. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a financial advisor or a banker or anything like that. So there are certain things, like people who are dual diagnosis that have like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder and stuff like that. Like some of those people need a higher level of care, mm-hmm. and a sponsor. Unless a sponsor is like a licensed therapist or something, works in this field that we're in, then they're equipped to help that person basically. Yeah. But that's not the norm. You know, not everybody that is in recovery works in recovery type of thing.
I like how you compartmentalize who can help you with what, and being able to notice kind of like the power that comes with certain people and the professions that come with certain people. And in so many different ways, it's exactly how it is that we're talking about, say, the 12 steps and then a spiritual awakening and your growth when it comes to God. The 12 steps, what they do is like a medicine. It takes care of one very specific thing. It's to keep you sober. That's its job. Its job is not necessarily to get you close to God. That's not specifically its job. Its job is to be able to take care of your sobriety, make sure that you're sober. And that with that, a lot of people, most people that are inside those rooms, they know they have to keep on coming back to it. It's like, it's a medicine I'm going to need for the rest of my life. It's like insulin, you know, I'm going to need it for the rest of my life. But that is not my life. That is not what my life is consistent of. That gets me healthy enough to be able to pursue my life. And that's what kind of like it is you want to draw the line with things, or what you want people to understand, is that the doorknob can't get you anywhere. It's not going to get you in your next like huge stage in life and everything of the sort. Sobriety, staying in the 12 steps, understanding everything that comes along with that is ridiculously important, and it keeps you healthy so you can actually live. But the living part comes with, at least from what it is that I'm understanding from yourself and what I believe,
is the way, the truth, and the life, and that's the Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And there's no other way that you can find it. Yeah. You can be sober, and you can work the 12 steps. We will be just as healthy as a bunch of these other people that have never really struggled with addiction in their life. Yeah. They don't have Jesus Christ in their life either. And the life is mundane. Nothing is happening.
And you know, you said something about Jesus. Jesus was the only one ever throughout history. Mm-hmm. No other God, no other religion has ever said, I am the way, the truth, and the life.
That's right.
Nobody, the only way to the Father, to God, is but through me.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever made that claim, yeah, ever. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean?
That's a powerful claim.
Yeah, oh, it's powerful, man. Ooh, man. Oh, you're getting me excited, bro.
And it's great because what we're seeing here is that the issue isn't necessarily that people aren't open to finding a spiritual higher power. That's not the problem. Mm. I think the issue it is that we're seeing is that, like, man, people are not understanding the importance of the spirituality. They're not understanding the importance of the higher power. Like, the higher power can only truly be filled in by one person. It takes a while sometimes. For certain people, they'll start with the doorknob, mm-hmm, and they'll move, yeah, themselves into maybe some different religion or a cult or whatever the case may be. But the point is always, at least built off of how the 12 steps was even built in its foundation of it, is that eventually you land at Jesus. Eventually you get to the point, and the point is being, go to Jesus, the truth, the life. And if you don't get there, you kind of might get to a point to where you will struggle. You will struggle inside of your own spirituality. It should be told, the people that it is that I do know that do work the 12 steps, they love Jesus. Mm-hmm. The ones that are actually not just working the 12 steps, but the ones that are actually pursuing recovery, they're the ones that actually love Jesus. They're going, yeah, they're trying to find life beyond sobriety. It's not just about being sober. It's about being able to say, what's my purpose?
Yes.
What should I do in my life? What's the point of all of this? Me, sober for what? Sober to watch Netflix all day long? No, it's got to be more than that, right? And they're usually always leaning back to Jesus Christ, because Jesus seems to be the only one who's giving something like life, giving, mm-hmm, something like purpose, giving something like direction, real direction. Not just, hey, just have some peace in your life and it's fine. No, real purpose, where you be able to affect the next person in line in front of yourself. The subject is, I think that it comes with a lot of, we'll say, questions. Like, in my mind, like, I don't get that. Like, I don't understand. I get it, but at the same time, I don't understand why people would think that there's any other thing, any other spiritual higher power than Jesus Christ. But the fact of the matter is that we have the will to be able to choose whatever it is that we want, and we get to see that happening inside the 12 steps as well. And somebody inside of recovery, knowing, especially in your life, that you've seen the growth in yourself, that you've seen Jesus working in your life, to be able to watch anybody else inside of, like, the same type of roots of getting sober and dealing with addiction yourself, to see that happening, you're like, oh man, there's a cheat code for this, brother. Like, there's a way to, like, really, like, kind of like get in a place where you can find some peace as you're doing your 12 steps, and, yeah, your growth can have a lot more purpose in it, instead of kind of being in this kind of dull space. Again, I think the subject is it expands beyond 12 steps and anybody inside of recovery, especially from substance abuse. It actually bleeds into the rest of the world. That the only answer to all of our growth and direction and purpose in our life is only ever going to be Jesus Christ.
Alika, amen.
Yeah, Alika, thank you so much for being on this podcast with me and talking about the subject. I do love talking about these two things. Happen to be the two things that slammed together in my life in the past 6 years, yeah, which is Jesus and recovery.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to untangle either one of them. They've been entirely entangled in my life, and both of them are ridiculously important to me. And recovery, I've come to find out again that it is about people that are trying to kill the self, kill the defects, kill the things in our lives that are really holding us back, and to stay honest about that. And I've honestly learned that more from recovery than I have from anybody else in the world, so I'm super appreciative of that. And at the same time, boosting up what it means to actually believe in Jesus Christ. And so, again, thank you for bringing this the subject to me. Is there any plugs that you got for any listeners out there? How people can find you, or how you want people maybe be able to follow you?
Yeah, if you guys do want to follow me, I'm on social media. My name is Alika Gambill. I also have a nonprofit organization that I started called Pro Recovery Power. You can go to the website, prorecoverypower.com. It's Pro Recovery Power all over social media. It's all the same. We host different sober events, facilitate connection between people in recovery, because the opposite of addiction is connection. And just so happened, we have an event coming up this month on the 18th. It's going to be at Liftoff Recovery. It's going to be from 5 to 9 p.m. So we hope you guys can make it. Please come get connected and stay connected. dare you.
I love it. And that's March 18th, 2023. Yes. So if you listen to this beyond that, sorry you missed it. But you can go to our website at setfreeanaheim.com, and you'll be able to see a lot of events that we actually have a lot. This is just another event in our long list of events that'll be happening in the future anyway. Alika, again, thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. And I'm sure I'll have you again on somewhat soon to talk about some other crazy
subject. Bro. I can bring my wife. We can talk about marriage.
That's
I'll bring
my
boxing gloves, though.
That sounds pretty exciting. I love it. Yeah. All right, Alika. Well, thank you for being on the show. And thanks to everybody out there that's listening. Make sure to go out there and show some love to people out there. They absolutely need it, and show them the love of Jesus Christ. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.
Thank you, brother.